It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this ninth day of May, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe around. And if you pop by right now, here, let me refresh just to make sure. If you pop by right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers in the form of Stockton Larry, Squeaky, Roger in Oregon, and Anatole. And greeting Barbara. Oh, really? Anatole, no, honey, no. Okay, whatever. It is Moran Monday. On the horn, and well, because it's a weekend, the Morans sort of stack up over the last couple of days. It's a number of other things as well. It's the day before the primary here in West Virginia, which ordinarily in years past has been more or less of a spectator sport for me. But well, this time through, I've got skin in the game, and I want to thank everybody. In and out of the Horn Family Community Congregation. I want to thank members of the Blue Dot family who have kindly supported my campaign and my attempt to secure a historic nomination. And we'll find out tomorrow if I've been successful. I know I must have put the fear of God in somebody because let's steal some signs thing has been going on. Yeah, but oddly enough, seems mostly to have been my signs. Who knew? But I'm getting ahead of myself because every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And that means we send out thanks over the weekend to our 9th, 8th, and 7th day of the month subscribers. That means we say thank you to James. Thank you, James, very kindly for being partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to Ralphs. Thank you to Khalil. Thank you, Khalil, so very kindly. Thank you, Mary Bell. Thanks as well to Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you to Susan. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you to David San Diego. Thank you, James. Thanks very kindly. And that's the subscribers for the 9th, 8th, and 7th day of this month of May. Oh, what a beautiful day it's been outside. We had almost monsoon-like rains all weekend long, naturally, because it was the weekend. But today dawned clear and beautiful. This one may qualify as the most beautiful day of 2022 thus far. We're looking for more of the same Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're going to crawl up into the low 80s. That's going to be something lovely. You know, we've got a rule of thumb here in the hills and hollers of Almost Level, West by Coal Mancinistan. And that rule of thumb says you never put out your garden until after Mother's Day. So, you know, any freak frosts and freezes should now be passed. I hope all the moms and the people who do the hard and loving work of moms had a great day yesterday for Mother's Day. Remember, Mother's Day was created by a West Virginian. Yes, it's a fact. Anna Jarvis of Grafton, West Virginia, was the driving force behind Mother's Day. After it took off and after she saw it be co-opted by people trying to sell crap, she actually worked just as hard trying to make it go away, because it was not what she had in mind. She wanted to honor mothers as opposed to creating. But, you know, like any holiday here in the capitalist wonderland that is the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, if you can't make a buck on it, what's the point? And so that's where we find ourselves. But nonetheless, I hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day. I hope you honored your mom, or if you are a mom, I hope you were done right by. I actually counted things up, and you know, even with me, ciphering is always nothing I ever take for granted, let's put it that way. But that being the case, my mom passed on June the 13th, 1997. And so this was, she was pretty much comatose on Mother's Day, 1997. So this was my 25th year, my 25th Mother's Day without a mom. And, it made for a bittersweet day, but I tried to make it very nice for Annette. Brought her some flowers and got her a nice dinner, and we had a lovely evening in. I gotta tell you, you know, we're both little sci-fi nerds. We can't help it. And the new Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Wow. No spoilers, but I'm really, really impressed with Anson Mount, who plays Captain Christopher Pike. And the guy playing Spock has just got him down to... there were, in this original episode of this new series, there were definitely a couple of places along the way where, got a little... The waterworks turned on, got a little teary-eyed, and it was, so I'm just really looking forward to it. They seem to be paying fairly close attention to canon, you know, Star Trek canon, and being true to the, it was sweet seeing T'Pring, knowing what was coming in that, what will be down the road in that regard, and, Nurse Chapel got an upgrade, and the young woman playing Cadet Uhura is just a wonderful talent. For the Trekkie nerds out there, I think it's going to make for some delightful watching. We watched also the 10th and final episode of Winning Time, the story of the rise of the Lakers in the 80s. Terribly impressive program. Oh, my God, it's so good. There are probably several Emmy-worthy performances in there. They could probably... The Emmy committee could probably piss off Jerry West righteously just by handing out a supporting actor nomination to the guy who plays Jerry West. Ethan Peck. Thank you, Lee, in New York. Ethan Peck plays the Strange New Spock. Yeah. grandson of Gregory Peck. I'll be darned.
Go away. Barbara is not here. She's made other plans, and they don't include you.
Sorry, one of my favorite episodes of Barney Miller, when Steve Landisberg got to haul out his Gregory Peck impression. Never mind. That's okay. I'm trying to actually figure out where the fundraising goal is. I know it's, let's just say it's $1,300. It's higher than that, but I don't have the heart for it. So we are $1,300 away from fully funded for the, and that means that, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and today. So that would be closer to $1,500, but that's basically what remains unfunded. So if you'd like to help out, run over, hit the PayPal button. It's there at headon.live. It's brand new. And hopefully we will bring that down a little bit because it's hard to run an independent liberal progressive broadcasting network with the insufficient funding. Oh well. Let's see where to start. Well, how about some international affairs? I saw it come across the notifications earlier. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Is going to win a huge presidential victory. He is the son of the single most corrupt dictator in Philippine history. He beat the he stomped the daylights out of the Liberal Democrat by twice the margin. Brother Deacon Asa taking that and running with it and saying, "You think we have a chance at the midterms? I'll play the cynical bastard this time around." That's the Philippines. This is here. So does that mean we're going to say? I mean, he's yuck. But he ain't Duterte. The question is, will Duterte cede power? I don't know. But hopefully, you know, and remember, he was the Philippines version of Trump. So maybe it's not all bad news. Scott in San Diego says, M Day, quoting Tom Lehrer, "Oedipus loved his mother like no other. His daughter was his sister, and his son was his brother." You little ray of sunshine, you. Randy Radar said, "I visited my mom in assisted living. There had been 4 recent cases of the Rona in her one small unit, so I had to dress up in a lot of protective gear, which sort of detracted from the visit, but I think she's being well cared for." I certainly hope so, Randy. I certainly hope so. And this is a, I don't know of any other way to put it. This is a grim day. A maggot appointee, a maggot federal judge in Alabama. And this goes to tell you just how maggot he is. A maggot federal judge in Alabama refused to issue a preliminary injunction against the first of its kind law there that condemns trans kids to suffer until at least their 19th birthday. Right, evil bastard. It used to be that you could at least count on the federal court to step in when states went unmitigated evil. But with what Nitwit Nero did to the federal judiciary, that's, well, that's part of history now and not part of our modern America. Lord, it's so wrong, the vandalism that he did to the federal judiciary. Remember, this is this, and what the federal judge did in Alabama was pretty much in line with what the Supreme Court of the United States did relative to the bounty bill in Texas. Oh, and there is much hemming and hawing and much Sturm und Drang and pearl clutching and hand-wringing because, oh my God, no. It appears that, among other things, Brett Kavanaugh's neighbor has decided that he is going to participate and host, well, not, I guess host is not the right word, but he's going to not stand idly by in the face of Brett Kavanaugh's manifest un-American evil. In fact, yeah, the word being used is organize. Yeah, his neighbor, Brett Kavanaugh's neighbor, I'm thinking. I saw the headline earlier and I was like, wait a minute. But no, that was a different neighbor I was thinking about. I was thinking about the patriot Rand Paul's neighbor. But Kavanaugh's neighbor, Lacey Wooten Hallway, well, she's in the same neighborhood as Brat, and she said, she's not going to stand idly by while he goes about the business of destroying the rights of tens of millions of American women. But of course, there are terribly, terribly proper people who say that that I don't agree with. I think you vote and you expand the court. You don't go to a guy's house. No. It would have been entirely wrong. Several decades past, about eight of them. It would have been terribly, terribly wrong if people had gone to, old Heinrich Himmler's home to protest there. That's simply not done. On the other hand, Lacey Wooten Hallway, patriot, said, I organized peaceful candlelit vigils in front of his house. We're about to get doomsday, so I'm not going to be civil to that man at all. But the neighbors, of course, have a terrible, terrible case of the NIMBYs. You know what the NIMBYs are. Not in my backyard. Right. The New York Times story says, neighbors tell her this kind of protest is disrespectful in a place they should believe should be a private family escape from bitter Washington politics. Other people cheer, saying they wouldn't personally join, but are encouraged to see someone speaking out. Yeah, as long as it's not them.
I mean, they wouldn't want to. They wouldn't dare run afoul of the Neighborhood Association of Homeowners.
God. Of course, they say it was a little bit like this in 1775, too. But good for
Good for Lacey Wooten Hallway. Good for her indeed. I mean, is there any kind of a consensus here in the Horn Family Community Congregation as to whether people should protest in front of his house? And that of Sammy Bad Breath and, you know, Slappy and Jenny's and Ann's Boy Neal's. And by all means, let us not leave out the Handmaid. What else do you do? And it becomes more and more obvious over the weekend that no, this was no liberal plot, this leak that went, it was announced a week ago, a couple hours from now. And as noted, more and more, it's entirely possible, given the fact that we do know that John Roberts was trying to peel a vote away from those five. There's another leak. A new story via the Washington Post, in which multiple sources are talking freely about old balls and strikes. Because his preferred outcome would have let the Mississippi law stand that bans abortions after 15 weeks. But he wanted to sort of leave Roe there gasping along on life support. And so more and more, at least to me, it seems like the leak. And come on, everybody knows inside the court. This wasn't some, I don't know, this wasn't, you know, this wasn't staff. This was done at direction. Those seven little archons, or nine little archons, six, you know, if you whatever. Those nine little archons, they do rule a very insular world. And so, when you get all Sherlock Holmes about it, if Alito was the one who had the, for lack of a better term, hard on to see this majority rule the day, then why would he not be the one who leaked it to harden up support? Oh dear, hard on, harden up, I guess we can see where this is going. But basically what the Washington Post story says is that those five, Sammy Bad Breath, Slappy Thomas, Ann's Boy Neal, Brat, and the Handmaid, told John Roberts to go chinny himself. And then with Sammy Bad Breath being the... Slappy is the senior most judge, so he gets to choose who writes the opinion. And Sammy Bad Breath is sitting there going, I've been working on this opinion for 15 years. I got it ready to go. It's even got a really groovy reference to Judge Hale who executed witches at Salem. Isn't that what we want to be saying here, y'all? And it probably has been sitting on a hard drive for 15 years. Because that is the reason that Sammy Bad Breath was put on the court by W.
And I've been at this long enough that I can actually remember when the confirmation fight was taking place, and a whole bunch of us from all over the country, people who do this kind of work, took an hour at a time, and there was 24 hours of broadcasting, trying to oppose this his godforsaken nomination. Maybe it would have been better if old Balls and Strikes had gotten on board with the majority, because then he could have assigned the writing of it. But he actually, you know, being the Chief Justice, he's supposed to care about the institutional dignity of the court. Yeah, what a laugh. This court has no dignity left. There's no integrity left to protect for this court. So the New York, not New York Times, but rather the Washington Post article indicates that, well, now that the floodgates are open, it's no more drip, drip, drip. It's just a tide now. The Post writing, but as of last week, the five-member majority to strike Roe remains intact, according to three conservatives close to the court who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss a sensitive matter. Those are conservative members of the court. Again, in line with the reason for leaking the thing in the first place, and that is to concrete the opinion. The article goes on and says, a person close to the court's most conservative members said Roberts told his fellow jurists in a private conference in early December that he planned to uphold the state law and write an opinion that left Roe and Casey in place for now. But the other conservatives were more interested in an opinion that overturned the precedents, the person said. Now, what this shows is that old Balls and Strikes actually has more political acumen than the five wild-eyed punk-ass ideologues from the Federalist Society who just wanted, you know, vandals want to vandalize, whether they're jurisprudential vandals or whether they are actual, no-kidding, vandals outside the gates of ancient Rome. And so, here we are. Because I have no doubt that old Balls and Strikes was thinking, well, you know, we'll let the Mississippi law stand, and that means there will be a lot of other laws like it, but it won't be a full-on assault on Roe, you know, a complete takedown of Roe, which will be better for Republicans in November. Because there is at least some thinking that this will be a massive mobilization. Ahead of the November midterm elections. That in fact, it could actually save the Democratic majorities or perhaps lead to an expansion of them in the Senate. Here we go. Yeah, protesting, Stephen New York asks. I think the question is, why shouldn't we protest in front of his house? Well, I mean, we got the answer to that. Well, it's not. It's simply not done. It's not cricket, old shoe. It's not according to the Marquess of Queensberry rules. Sure. Because, well, a man's home is his castle, and any women living in that castle are at best damsels in distress in need of his protection. Ron in Raleigh says, did you notice, going back to Star Trek Strange New Worlds, The interesting thing about the bridge crew of the Enterprise, do you know who the admiral was that came to get Pike? They're finally trying to get the timeline of the eugenics war right. Did you watch Picard season 2? No, I have not seen Picard season 2. But I did notice I did notice another name, the security chief, Singh. That sort of tickled my canon brain a little bit. Lee in New York says, don't give Nitwit Nero the credit. Federal justice openings were covered in turtle wax. If Mitch could not get a conservative, he would hold the seat open until he could fill it. This is why the orangutan asked openly, why Obama
did not fill all these seats.
Remember Goodwin Liu? Yeah, I know. But still, he was the one who got to put the stamp of approval on it, and he's the one who had Jenny Thomas whispering in his ear. So you got to wonder if the judge in Alabama had his name whispered into the ear of Nitwit Nero by none other than Slappy's wife. It's ugly out there. It's frightening out there. Oh, and of course, never underestimate the power of Bill Maher to be a complete and total hemorrhoid. Yeah, his liberalism extends about as far as the nearest pot legalization. On his show Friday evening, he quipped because, you know, there's always a line in there taking a shot at trans people. And he said, so, the Supreme Court's set to take away reproductive choice from all the women in this country. All of a sudden, your little pronouns don't seem so important anymore, do they? A little pissant. As if, you know, as if people can't walk and chew gum. I mean, he can't walk and chew gum at the same time. But the rest of us can. The trans community understands full well what's at stake here. And I haven't exactly seen a bunch of trans women or trans men or non-binaries out there saying, woohoo! Go, Alito! Go! Go, Brett Kavanaugh! No. We understand the avalanche that this is bringing. I mean, you read the opinion, it's kind of hard to miss. But, you know, I guess what? Bill Maher's just gonna Bill Maher? Oh, well. Meanwhile, I'm still searching throughout the entirety of my being for a single synapse or molecule even that gives a damn about the business with Dave Chappelle last week. I'll let you know if I find one. I wouldn't exactly put, I haven't put out a bounty for it because the likelihood of it existing is very, let's say. Oh, and by the way, hi, Don, up in British Columbia. I was just wondering if you know the Apple stream that I like listening on isn't working. I prefer that stream as I have Apple products, so it's easy, and also because it reduces the strain on your server. Additionally, our garden go-to date is May 24th, long weekend. Well, you're a little further north, so that makes sense. That's probably because that stream is tied to the White Rose Society stream, which I have not heard back from Ben on the server credentials, and I will be messaging him again. It doesn't reduce the strain. No, the Apple stream, it's all coming from the same place, so it is what it is. Well, and because it's, not well, but
there's just been a raft of tech problems of late. That began with the update that wiped out all the streaming data, and then there was a glitch on Friday. For anyone who didn't hear it at the time, the recording stopped somewhere along the way in Medias Res. So the Friday on the Front Porch archive recording was short by some, 30,000 megs or so. Or however we measure those things. But anyway, I got that part sorted, but I still have to get the other stream up and running. As to Bill Maher, Stephen New York says, I'm thinking he's not a hemorrhoid as much as he's a cancer. Hemorrhoids are curable. Yeah, basically you strangle a hemorrhoid. Never mind. Appendix. Wisdom tooth. Right. And the Trekkie community is having a lot of fun with this new series. Lee pointing out the chief medical officer was still on Kirk's Enterprise, Dr. Mbenga. He was slapping Spock's face to help him heal in a private little war. Abortion, here's an idea. Scott says, going forward, I think it's time for a new approach to be taken when it comes to rabid, radical, anti-choice politicians. This would apply at all levels, local, county, state, and federal. For men, this question must be put and answered, have you ever paid for or otherwise facilitated an abortion? For women, the same question would apply with this addition, have you ever had one? I'm sure some would consider these queries to be intrusive and inappropriate, an invasion of privacy, if you will. Not so. These politicians claim that there is no constitutional right to privacy. They truly believe that. These questions need to be asked and answered. And given the direction of the Supreme Court, well, these same questions should be put to all prospective judges as well. If you're talking about a Republican, they would simply refuse to answer. Remember the confirmation hearings for Brat and Ann's boy Neil and the handmaid? You know, if I call her the handmaid long enough, I'm completely going to forget her name. And it would be great if history would do the same. Oh, never mind. Never mind. So today, because we haven't had a really tasty, and this is because we're in Monday, we have a nomination for Jim Jacketoff Jordan. He's still mooning and moping over the absence of his god emperor from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So he took to Twitter to say, your 401k, Mrs. President Trump. And you get the idea that Fred Gutenberg, the father of Jamie, who was slaughtered at the age of 14 back 4 years ago at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Well, he responded, actually, I miss my daughter who was murdered because ignorant assholes like you refused to address gun violence. As for my 401k, still higher today than it was on the last day of the other guy, instead of Soviet-inspired tweets, do something worthwhile or shut up. Wow. Good for you, Fred Gutenberg. And he went on to say, well, this is something he said back in 2018. I have dedicated the rest of my life to fighting for the cause of gun safety. I will not stop. No other parent should ever go through what my family and 16 other families are going through. and so many other families in this country. Jim Shorts Jordan. Jeez. What a schmuck. And then, too bad there's not audio, but now that Mark Esper's book is out, in which, well, we talked about this last week, it sounds like a passage from Catch-22, in which he said that Nitwit Nero was asking,
I mean, can't you shoot the protest? Like, shoot him in the knee or something. Shoot him in the leg.
Well, CBS News reached out to him for his response to the things that Esper had said. Of course, according to him, it
never happened. It definitely never happened.
And so, after 60 Minutes interviewed Mark Esper, Nitwit Nero had...
Somebody who knows how to type. I got typing things that need to happen, do whatever.
And so the question, during a June 1st, 2020 meeting at the White House, the cabinet was debating what to do about the protests and civil unrest. Mark Esper says President Trump wanted to shoot some of the protesters in the legs. A lot of foul language was used and accused President Trump of calling members of the cabinet
fucking losers.
Yeah. Of course he did. And answering that, Nitwit Nero replied,
this is a complete lie, and 10 witnesses can back it up. Mark Esper was weak and totally ineffective, and because of it, I had to run the military. I took out ISIS, Qasem Soleimani, al-Baghdadi, rebuilt the military with $2.5 trillion, created Space Force. You ever heard of Space Force, perhaps? Excuse me?
No, I'm adding some of that.
And so much more. Mark Esper was a stiff who was desperate not to lose his job. He'd do anything I wanted. That's why I called him Yesper. He was a lightweight and figurehead. And I realized it very early on. He was recommended to me by some very weak rhinos, and that's what he turned out to be.
And then after the church there on Lafayette Square was partially burned, he wanted to send 10,000 troops into clear out the protest, whatever.
Wrong. I wanted to send at least 10,000 troops for January 6th. Because I knew many people were coming to Washington that day to protest the corrupt presidential election of 2020. Nancy Pelosi and the D.C. mayor turned me down. 60 Minutes should ask them why they chose to not have proper security, which would have totally changed that day and allowed us to have a proper debate on the evidence of massive election fraud, which the fake news media still refuses to cover whatsoever.
He just admitted that he was in. Oh my God, he was in on it. Esper says Mark Meadows called him to relieve him of his post and said Esper was not sufficiently loyal and the president was not happy with you.
I fired Esper because he was a rhino incapable of leading and I had to run the military myself.
Yeah. How's that for horrifying? For some period of time, the entire military might of the United States was in the hands of Cadet Bone Spurs. That was enough to give me the creeping horrors. But there we are. Because it's Moran Monday. And, well, on top of that, because he still hears his master's voice, the man who looks like rancid, what rancid hot dog water smells, is out doing damage control after the Esper interview. And so today, racist Bannon, come along, Bandit, decided to attack Mark Esper. Do you think racist Bannon understands that Nitwit Nero is never going to love him the same way he once loved him? He's moved on. He's moved on, Steve. He's just not that into you.
Esper lays out the coup, and he lays out the guilt of he and Millie. And we're going to have a massive investigation of this, sir. I hope and I believe you'll go to prison. Because you belong in prison. Strategic retreats. Would that happen to be what I fought for in 17 that you guys lied about and spun away from? Was the getting out of Afghanistan that you lied to Trump about all of it, the money, all of it? And I can go back and prove it. I got the receipts. Okay? I got the receipts. You did this under the dark of night. This is what coup plotters do. And you're going to sit there on national TV, and no offense, 60 Minutes, she's got to stop throwing the softballs, right? This is disgusting. Can't even ask a tough follow-on question. Can't ask a tough follow-on question. 60 Minutes is a disaster now. That's the coach pitch. One step removed from T-ball. And Esper, he's sitting there worming around with those little shifty eyes and those glasses, nervous. You're going to be a lot more nervous, brother. You're guilty of treason. You're guilty of treason in your own words. Show me anywhere you had authority to do this.
Treason is pretty narrowly defined within the Constitution of the United States. Aid and comfort to the enemy, or... Oh, well. But, again, the people who tune into racist Bannon aren't concerned with niceties like the actual definition of treason.
Under the cloak of night. Show me anywhere that you don't directly report to the commander-in-chief of the United States. That guy be Donald J. Trump, who was duly elected on 3 November of 2020. Thank you very much. This is what happens if you don't do this, and I don't like calling out Pompeo or McCormick or Dave Urban. I know those guys well. On one level, they're very good guys, but no. Your hands are all over this. Your handprints are all over this. You're getting called out. You think you're going to use Esper as a weapon against Donald J. Trump in his reelection? You are sadly, sadly, sadly mistaken.
Did you catch that one little piece? Donald Trump, who was duly elected on November the 3rd, 2020? He wasn't. There isn't a shred of evidence to suggest that he was. But racist Bannon got himself a pardon. Might need another one someday. And so he's going to keep on carrying the water. God, it's disgusting. We're in so much trouble. Oh, over the weekend, video emerged of a, well, I guess you could call it a march in New York City. P- people chanting slogans in support of a woman's right to choose. And there, there was a, you know, a barking maggot offering what? A counterpoint? You know, like everywhere else on the East Coast, it was apparently rainy in New York City. Pro-choice clinic defenders marched. And the following exchange took place. I know there's a lot of chaos there, but this white dude, bro, yells, you have no choice, not your body, not your choice. Your body is mine and you're having my baby. Now there are four dude bros standing there. And the guy doing the yelling is wearing a Fire Department of New York gear. And he looks kind of prototypically Aryan and white and male and typical, you know, maggot. Well, the fire department, FDNY, got a lot of pushback over that. And the dude bro had on an FDNY jacket and an America First cap. The jacket says ladder number 58. The name Powers appears on it. Ladder 58 would be within Engine 45, Battalion 18. And the FDNY actually has a code of conduct. It says, the enormous commitment necessary to perform the department's task requires excellence of character. We inspire each other through pride in our unit, which is a belief that every action reflects on all the members of the unit, both past and present. And so the question remains, who the hell is this dude? Not your body, not your choice, you're having my baby. So... no telling how this guy got hold of Mr. Powers' jacket. But people think they know who the dude was. And, of course, there was a certain amount of irony in the fact that he was standing on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral, barking and grunting and hooting while wearing FDNY gear. St. Patrick's Roman Catholic Cathedral. Because nobody is happier about all this than the Roman Church, no matter how many Roman Catholic women die as a result. So it'll be curious to see if the people who think they've figured out who it is turn out to be correct. And, of course, the four dude bros standing there on the porch of St. Patrick's Cathedral were all clutching rosaries. But, of course, they were. And, of course, Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, said, "The men holding rosaries, Bibles, and wearing America First hats, bravely defending their churches against the abortionist horde, are heroes, every single one of them, heroes." Because that was another thing that was promulgated over the course of the weekend. It's Mother's Day, and the baby eaters are going to attack the churches on Mother's Day. You know, just another thing that didn't happen. Because, of course. But those guys were very real, but, eventually, all the dude bros will be identified, and hopefully the whole wide world can know who they are. And, by the way, there's a young lawyer named Chase Strangio. He's the deputy director for trans justice with the ACLU LGBTQ and HIV project. And he's been a leading voice on how we talk about people who are and can become pregnant. Little Marco Rubio in Florida this past Friday introduced a bill that would prevent employers from deducting expenses related to their employees' travel costs when they seek gender-affirming care for their children out of state or for those seeking an abortion. And Chase Strangio spoke up and said, you know, it's not just women who are affected. We need to hold space for people like me who are not women who may become pregnant. It allows people to have more access to care. It allows more robust movement that lets more people in. Because, of course, Chase Strangio is a trans man who is still capable of becoming pregnant. And he is a powerful voice for inclusion. Because it is a fact that doctors in Alabama had a terribly, terribly busy last few weeks. The story from the Associated Press deals with Dr. Hussein Abdul Latif, who in the last week was putting out prescription refills as quickly as he possibly could so that his transgender patients would have access to their puberty blockers before his actions became illegal as of midnight today, you know, yesterday. Because if he writes one now, he's a criminal. He's a pediatric endocrinologist. Dr. Abdul Latif is. He knows more about the endocrinology of children than all the Republicans in the United States of America combined. If he forgot 99% of what he knows about pediatric endocrinology, he would still know more pediatric endocrinology than every Republican in the United States combined. He's a co-founder of the Gender Clinic in Birmingham. He noted it was already hard enough for families of gender non-conforming kids in Talabama. He said they already faced the difficult decision of leaving their church family or being viewed less worthy. They always existed, but they often did not have the feeling of empowerment to come out or come out to their physicians. And now that they are, we're hitting them back with legal action. And of course, as he pointed out, both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Pediatric Endocrine Society are of one mind with regard to the necessity and the compassion of providing gender-affirming therapy for gender non-conforming kids, which, by the way, doesn't include sex change surgeries. He's not happy. Dr. Abdul Latif said, this state is not only saying I'm a criminal for prescribing those medications, but it's saying that my organization of thousands of physicians, pediatricians, and pediatric endocrinologists are maybe partners in that criminal enterprise. The U.S. Department of Justice has joined in the lawsuit that four Alabama families with trans kids have filed. And the judge refused to issue the preliminary injunction. It is monstrous. The Attorney General of Alabama, Steve Marshall, last week said,
the science and common sense are on Alabama's side. We will win this fight to protect our children.
Is that what you're going to call it, Steve, when you find them, when mommy and daddy find them in the shower at the end of a belt? Because that's going to happen. I'm curious that they set it to take effect on Mother's Day, when all too many mothers in Alabama are already grieving the loss of their children. And not because they're not expressing gender in the Christian way that is, that the Republicans approve of. You know, it's funny that this can reach across state lines. But it's a fact. It did. It has. It does. I had very specific reasons for going and having my surgery in Birmingham. The surgeon had an excellent reputation. Still does. Magnificent practitioner. Among other things, like I've said before, he is an absolute expert in the treatment of bladder cancer, urethral cancers. He is a reconstructive urologist. And he is acknowledged to do fantastic work, but he's not going to be doing it in Alabama anymore. He gone. He left. Because the state of Alabama decided to hang out to hang his patients out to dry, including cisgender men and cisgender women, desperately in need of urologic treatment following cancer. But he also did gender surgeries. Yeah. He did mine. And he did a great job. Tomorrow will be 6 months for me, half a year. As myself. And in late June, I was scheduled to go for what would have been my six-month follow-up, but not really, more like eight. But that won't happen now. That won't happen because the state of Alabama ran him out, and he's going to set up a new practice in the greater Nash Vegas area. So I'll have to go there to get my follow-up, only what would have been late June will now be late August. Which will mean I'll be at like 10 months. Everything's okay. And there really should be no surprise to any of this. Because this is the state that brought you the stand in the schoolhouse door.
Segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation forever, said George Wallace.
This is the state that brought you the slaughter of Viola Liuzzo on a dark and lonely road outside Selma. This is the state that brought you Knight Riders, the Klan, eagerly adopted, embraced, and advanced Jim Crow. Segregation, segregated schools, segregated lunch counters, and you know, when we look at the bathroom wars of 2000 of the 2020s now, it should come as no surprise that it's happening in the same places where those delicate flowers of Southern femininity, those white ladies, were terrified, I tell you, terrified that they might have to go pee-pee with a black woman in the same room. No. Yes. Again, they don't have any original ideas. They just recycle, rehash the same toxic old ones. Another doctor who testified last week in the evidentiary hearing before the maggot judge, Dr. Marissa Ledinsky, she packed up bag and baggage and went to Alabama as a professor and a practicing physician at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. They founded the Gender Clinic in 2015, and they had a patient base of more than 150 young people. Talking to the Associated Press, she said she felt like she was walking in a nightmare. This is the first time ever that I can remember, at least for pediatricians, that we are literally forced to choose between the Hippocratic oath we took to do no harm and never abandon our patients versus the facing of a potential felony conviction. And one of the things that really moved her was that she came from Cincinnati. And every day on the way to work, she went past a place in her route to work there in Cincinnati where a girl named Leela Alcorn took a step out in front of an oncoming tractor trailer and committed suicide. Leela Alcorn was a trans girl. She left a note that said, "My death needs to mean something. Fix society, please." And a lot of the kids who go to that, who've gone to that clinic in Birmingham have done so after suicide attempts. One of the young patients had 5 attempts. You know what happened when these kids finally got appropriate treatment? They stopped wanting to die. They stopped wanting to die. David Fuller. Well, his trans daughter was one of the first patients at the clinic in Birmingham. He said, "In our minds, there's no doubt they saved my daughter's life." His daughter Jessica is 22 now. She came out to her daddy when she was 16, 6 years ago. She said, the dysphoria was awful and I was thinking about suicide more often than I wished to talk about. She told the Associated Press, it's terrifying, not just for the kids, but the doctors and nurses just trying to help kids not kill themselves. You going to arrest him for something so harmless? And see, whenever Alabama is involved, or Mississippi, etc., we learn that the only way they learn is by force. They hear only through their buttocks. They had to learn that way in 1861. They had to learn that way in 1960. And there is a solution to this problem. And it requires is... Why do I bother? All it requires is a little bit of determination and a little bit of moral courage. There are some pretty massive employers in Alabama. Mercedes-Benz USA, Hyundai, Amazon, and a lot more. So far, they have been as silent as a graven image. But the problem is, they went to Alabama because Alabama hates its working class people almost as much as it hates gay and trans people. And so the laws that protect working people in Alabama are woefully, laughably inadequate. And so Hyundai, and I think Kia, maybe Toyota, Amazon, Mercedes-Benz, they knew that they could build cars on the cheap and not have to lower their prices, they could keep charging the prices they were charging because, you know, the unions wouldn't get in the way. I mean, you know, capitalism. To be, for instance, an assembly line worker for Mercedes-Benz in, say, Stuttgart, is a wildly different thing from being a Mercedes-Benz worker outside Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The German Mercedes-Benz worker has lots of workplace protections, significant workplace dignity, a meaningful retirement, protections against unjust termination from employment, and the Mercedes-Benz worker in Alabama has precisely none of that. And there needs to be pressure brought to bear, and there are not enough people in the trans community to bring that pressure to bear, so we need our allies. We need the L, the G, the B, the Q in the LGBTQ community. And they are stepping up to bring economic pressure on those massive corporations to get the hell out of Alabama. I mean, when you consider the number of people who are employed by these corporations, it is statistically impossible that there is not some demonstrable, determinable number of people from the affected community within the ranks of their employees. Hell, maybe some of their executives. You remember way back when Alabama was having its one of its anti-immigrant spasms, and it was about driver's license? And literally the first person busted was a vice president for Mercedes-Benz. Los papers, but not in order. Actually, when you're in Alabama, your papers ain't in order. Remember that? Because I do. Like I said, Alabama needs them more than they need Alabama. And for anyone who's ever read, and the book is several, well, it's over a decade old now, but it remains relevant. For anybody who's ever read Greg LeRoy's The Great American Job Scam, there are plenty of other states in this union that despise working people every bit as much as Alabama does. And they would abase themselves, embarrass themselves, humiliate themselves, give away the public commons in an instant for a chance to host a Mercedes-Benz or a Hyundai or a Kia or Amazon or what have you. They'd be downright eager. One wonders if that kind of courage exists. In corporate boardrooms. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned Jessica Fuller, who's 22 now, fully transitioned, living her life happily. Well, her daddy, David Fuller, he's not exactly some raging liberal panty-waist pinko commie simp. David Fuller is a sergeant with the Gadsden, Alabama Police Department. He said, I'm a police officer and I know what a crime is. I know what a criminal is. These people are not criminals. It's political crap. And he notes that those two doctors and the staff around them saved his daughter's life and gave her a future. But Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw, K. Ivy Putin, she don't care. It's an election year, and, well, the mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers, they got to have something to get all excited about. Well, thank God David Fuller was able to get his daughter. Through the program. Before the God-fearers in Alabama could kill her. And there's a 15-year-old. She spoke in front of cameras. Her name is Harley Walker. 15 years old and having to fight for her life.
Young lady in particular, Harley Walker, she's 15 years old. She said that this care was what got her through the hardest times of her life. Take a listen.
Just being able to be who I am really kind of saved me. And I was going through such hard mental health at that time. And if I would have continued going on that path, I would have gotten severe depression and even maybe had thoughts about suicide. And because I was not happy. I was not who I was. And so it saved my life pretty much, and it saved my mental health, and it has benefited me in so many ways now.
Now bear in mind, at 15, mostly all she's had is puberty blockers. She just didn't have to live in the wrong gender anymore. And the entire governmental apparatus of Alabama sees her as a criminal. The clip came from NBC. You can probably find it. Just a teenage girl. That's all. But she's going to grow into a woman instead of being food for worms. Which, of course, is what the goddamn Republicans want. Because they need a pure cishet Aryan state in Alabama. Now, Lee in New York says, Alabama employers. Quiet as a Disney mouse. I wonder if those boardrooms are so quiet. Yeah. And, of course, the Nazis were marching on Disney this weekend. People, and I don't know if Texas T is listening tonight, but I thought of you when I saw something on Twitter. People in San Antonio woke up to find a bunch of plastic bags with printed material and, like, fish tank gravel in it to make them throwable. We've seen this in West Virginia, too. A rainbow Star of David and a rainbow pentagram printed with the Disney, you know, the Disney font. Every single aspect of Disney child grooming is Jewish. Protect your children, protect your children, protect your children. And showing members of the Disney board, I guess, or their officers, each one with a Star of David stamped on their forehead. Bob Chapek, Alan Braverman, etc. CFO, Chairman, CEO, Senior Executive VP, Executive VP, and under each name, Jewish! You know, if these people, if these Republicans really gave a tinker's damn about any of the crap they profess to care about, they might just happen to notice that they're in bed with Nazis. But no. And in point of fact, they've been busy protesting. And remember back at the time that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis was running for governor? I pointed out, and I've continued to point out to this very day, that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis' margin of victory was so narrow that there is no way he won without the help of the Nazis who stepped in and ran robocalls against him. And that's why I've said all along that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis is only governor of Florida through the help of, no kidding, real-life actual Nazis. And the Republicans said, cool! We have to face up to who these fascist animals are. because they are that. Only animals want to hurt children. I know. Lady B says, can you imagine all the effort and energy the South put towards keeping black women out of public restrooms? These were, for the most part, cisgender women who needed to pee. I know. Now there are folks going hard against transgender women who just want to pee. Just my opinion, but I don't think you transgender women go into female restrooms scoping for women to do a booty call with. Wait a minute. Lady B, no fair. If anything, I think you'd be too nervous to do any looking. Your whole focus is to live your authentic life and present as well as possible. Don't bother me none. I've known two transgender women, one older, one younger. Since American bathroom builders seem to love to build stalls with almost inch-wide gaps between the doors and the frame, I can see where that would cause some angst, even though you and all transgender women prefer to pee sitting down. After all, it ain't a 50-50 choice anymore. I heard there were older women at that job I was at who were trying to peep through the cracks every time Kira went to the restroom. How fucking psycho is that? Who the fuck cares about shit like that, Robin? Weird, sick people, Lady B. The women's restroom was much safer for her. It's much safer for all trans women. I would never want to see y'all forced into the bathroom opposite your gender. Way too fucking dangerous. Way too fucking dangerous. First, bathroom segregation for black women, now for transgender women. The more things change, dudette, the more things stay the same. I think it's the stay the same part. I mean, I think there's really honest-to-God scholarship to be done with these morans. As to what, I mean, were they potty trained at gunpoint? Or, I don't know, did daddy potty train them as little girls and leer at them? I mean, we know about Rudy Giuliani's son. Giving his three-month-old daughter's vagina a good looking over. Telling her that he would be the only one looking at that for the next 25 years. I mean, does that give you the howling cringes that it gives to me? Go pee-pee for daddy, little princess. In the name of Jesus. And then, just, you know, because they get so worked up about who's going pee-pee where, open a browser. I'll do it with you. Open a browser, doesn't matter which one it is, any of them will do. And just type BUCKANGEL, Buck Angel. The Wikipedia article is liable to pop up, and that includes a black and white photo. The search engine I used has some color photos. I would dearly love, during one of these potty debates, to put up a picture of shirtless Buck Angel and say, what are you going to do when Buck walks into the ladies' room? God, they'd have to get out the smelling salts and the fainting couches for the Republican women, the self-hating Republican women, and probably have to get out a few for some of the Republican men, too, because some of them start scratching themselves. I could take him, by God. No man's going to walk into the ladies' room. No, that's what we're talking about here. And that is when you spring what Mark Twain called the snapper. Buck Angel has a vagina. And the laws that they're promulgating would make Buck, and I'm guessing that a lot of cishet women would probably be more than a little creeped out if Buck came swanning into the ladies' room. But that's what Republicans want. That's what the Christians want. Dude with a shaven head and tats all over his pecs and his arms and little red mustache and little and beard and
Yep. Got to go to the restroom that your birth certificate says you are. Because biological sex, because chromosomes. There you are. I can't tell you how many times. Then, you know, first of all, I go into the ladies' room. I carry my clutch with me because it's got my driver's license in it. And my driver's license says sex, female. So, and it's going to happen one of these days. You know, it's part of the reason that I never leave this house unless I am fully done. Full face of makeup, presenting absolute feminine. I actually have to dress better, and that's not me being a bitch, but I have to dress more overtly feminine when I go out than a lot of my cis female friends. And we've talked about it, and they're like, we understand. You live a dangerous life. But I also live a happy life. And I want there to be less trans kids stepping in front of tractor trailers. Less kids jumping off of roofs. Less kids. But the people who follow the Prince of Peace, they want them dead. And the same urge that makes them attack trans kids is the same urge that makes them attack the rights of cis women and non-gender conforming people to take care of their reproductive needs. This is not that hard. But then again, they are morons. Oh, and Lady B, when you say first bathroom segregation for black women, now for transgender women, don't forget in the middle there is the brutality of restroom policing for non-gender conformative cis females. You know, butch lesbians, mannish women. Who there's a long social history of them being tormented for simply trying to use the bathroom. Now, one obvious aspect of this is that businesses may just start not having public accommodations. That was the way that Confederate states originally responded to the idea of having desegregated this or desegregated that. The Walgreens lunch counter? Well, there's still Walgreens. I don't know why. But they just settled a massive suit in Florida for their participation in the opioid crisis. But Walgreens went from having lunch counters to not having lunch counters because, by God, it wasn't worth having a lunch counter if you were going to have to let those people sit at it. The whole history of Southern academies. When churches, in support of segregation, opened their own schools so their precious little white children wouldn't have to go to school with the little black kids. And that's the overall thrust of this Moran nomination is our inability to understand this as a dynamic whole. W-H-O-L-E whole. These are not discrete data points. They are all the same thing. Whether it's a woman's right to choose or a person who can become pregnant's right to choose, or the ability to go to the restroom when you're dying. I've driven 50 miles in real discomfort just to get home. Ugh.
Woolworth's lunch counter. Yes, correction. Lee in New York says Woolworth's lunch counter. Yes, I think you're right. We regret the error. But just to get home. But now there's a phenomenon that I see around here because West Virginia has been so brutalized by the opioid pandemic that businesses just put signs on the door that say absolutely no public restrooms inside. So that people who are addicted won't come into the restroom and fix in there. Or maybe OD in there. Or die in there. And that may be where we're going. It may be. Oh, by the way, thanks so kindly to Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan. Sparky bails out when he decides sometimes. And Steve jumped in as your kindly moderator in the Horn chat room. Thank you. Skeeve! Thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. And so with the program about half over and what we're calling about a $1,500 fundraising goal reduced by about $10, yes. And thank you, Scott in San Diego, for that. Well, let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Robin.
Yes.
Robin.
Scott. Great Scott.
You know, good Lord, Jim. I'm a doctor, not an astronaut. No, wait a minute. Something. I think of Steve in Georgia Stan as the John Charles Patrick Crowan Daily moderator of chat rooms. Remember line?
High praise that.
You know, just civil and decent, got his little bow tie on, telling people to enter and sign in, please. My God. Where has civility gone, Robin?
It was a different America, Scott.
Right down the old crapper. That's what I've got to say. And I was not aware of Buck Angel. And I Googled. I was in the kitchen getting my coffee when you were giving out his name, so I was late Googling. And there's a film called Mr. Angel, and he's all done up. He's got a leather cap on, and it looks for all the world like people I used to see writing, in their leathers outside of the bar, the Eagle, I think it was, in D.C., up around the corner from the FBI. Just as butch as you please.
Well, it was walking distance for J. Edgar, so.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. There were, I don't know what's there now, but there were a lot of gay bars within convenient walking distance of the FBI building, both old and new.
And do you think that was a mistake, Scott? Was that just a curious coincidence?
At the corner of 9th and Pennsylvania, a corner I'm sure you passed by a number of times without knowing, like more or less a little up the street from where the old post office is, where that became the T Hotel. And I don't mean T in a positive way. I mean T as in turd blossom. No, that's, anyway. It was catty-corner from the old FBI building. And then the new FBI building was built right across the street, okay? There was a theory going around that in J. Edgar's time, and used to pal around with Clyde Tolson, was that his name, his good friend?
Yes, his longtime companion.
They would lunch together every afternoon at the Mayflower dining room at the Mayflower Hotel. There was a rumor going around that there was a tunnel, a subterranean passageway from the old FBI building to the hideaway, because... See, it wasn't just the hideaway. I'll give you a little D.C. gay history. Back in those days, at the corner of 9th and Pennsylvania, there was the Hickory House Restaurant. which was just a regular old restaurant. Downstairs was a gay bar called The Hideaway. And then on the 9th Street side, that was the Pennsylvania Avenue side, on the 9th Street side, there was a separate entrance to two other bars, a leather bar, and upstairs from that was a drag bar. It was like you didn't have to hardly leave the parking space to have whatever fancy tickle that you wanted back in those days. But it's probably an office building, a nondescript office building now where nothing goes on. And this is progress, huh? Come on. Who are you kidding? But I saw Mr. Angel or Ms. Angel or
Mr. Angel. Mr. That's a dude.
Oh, all right. Oh, well, I'm not going to, you know.
No, he's a trans man. He identifies as a guy.
If he walks in the men's room while I'm there, I'm going to stop in midstream and offer him my urinal. I don't, just out of deference and admiration.
Well, no, but not just, well, not just that, though. What do you do, because not to get too graphic about this, Buck Angel still has a vag.
Well, I'll offer a booth.
But the that's not the problem. Nobody's going to look twice at him walking into the men's room. The problem occurs with these Republicans who insist that whatever was put down on the birth certificate is by God whatever. So, you know, if a place like Alabama is going to pass a birth certificate police or what. But what do you do when you force a Buck Angel to walk into the ladies' room? They're at some highfalutin, well, or lowfalutin restaurant in Birmingham or Montgomery.
Well, I mean, if I were a woman in the ladies' room, I would be put out by that. If he is a man,
of course you would.
Well, yeah. Why aren't the fucking by the way, is cis short for something? This is a new term by me.
No, it's Latin.
Oh.
It means same. CIS means same.
Oh, well, dumb me. I didn't take Latin. Okay.
Let's go ahead and finish this out, because if you're asking, somebody else is too. It's kind of like the whole thing about why do you call him Sammy Bad Breath, because you can't spell halitosis without Alito.
I like that. You're clever.
Thank you. I'm proud. but we say cisgender. So if your gender assumed at birth matches how you identify, you are cisgender. If there is conflict between the gender that was assumed for you at birth and how you identify, you are transgender. And the best example of how this works is, because it always is in my world, ancient Rome. Because in ancient Rome, there were two Gauls.
G-A-U-L?
Not like two Gauls walk into a bar. But there were two locations that were both Gaul. G-A-U-L.
Must have driven the postal carriers wild.
There was Gaul across the Alps, and that was Gallia Transalpina. Gaul literally across the Alps.
Wait a minute. You're making this up.
No!
Say that again. That's like a child's game.
No, Gallia Transalpina. Transalpine Gaul. Gaul across the Alps.
Across the Alps, okay.
Right. And on this side of the Alps, if you're in Rome, there's Gallia Cisalpina.
I don't think you're
C-I-S. Cisalpina. Gaul, same side of the Alps as Rome.
Say what it says again, because I like when you talk. You talk. You
use your mouth better than a $20 whore. I know. Gallia Transalpina, Gallia Cisalpina.
I want that. I want tattoos, one on each arm, that say that. These will be my first two tattoos, and I think it's culturally sound for me to get both of those. I just like the way
But that's
flows.
What it means.
All right, well, And who says you can't learn anything anymore?
Well, I mean, the old means by which we indicate something on a birth certificate is, and imagine, okay, here's a good marker. Some people have earlobes that dangle, okay?
Yeah.
You can kind of reach up and check and see what yours are. I have danglers. Other people have earlobes that just don't dangle, and they just grow right into the side of their heads. Okay?
I think I've met a few of those people.
Annette and I. Annette is an earlobe, a non-dangler, and I'm... Well, this isn't working out so well after all.
Well, in some ways, you're a former dangler.
Damn it! let's say a doctor, let's say the baby is born, and the doctor says, that baby has dangling earlobes. That baby is a boy.
Okay.
And no matter how you grew up, you were told you were a boy because, by God, you've got dangling earlobes.
On the basis of your lobes.
Yeah, on the basis of a single observation. Or maybe baby has I've always called it the index toe. You know, it's the index finger, the one next to the thumb. Well, that means with the toe next to the big toe must be the index toe.
It's always usually the longer toe.
Well, but not everybody. Okay.
Well, I'm a proud long toer.
For instance, I was told years and years and years ago that I would never be much of a dancer. This by an actual dancer. I said, why? And she said, because your index toe is longer than your big toe. Then decades went by, and because everything on the internet is true, I found something that meant that I was related to the pharaohs of old.
They weren't known for their dancing either.
The pharaoh desires grapes, damn it.
Based on those hieroglyphics on the side.
Fan me with a palm frond now.
They do the, I was going to say the curly shuffle. I mean the, what was the thing that Steve Martin used to do? The King Tut?
Yeah.
They've got that pose.
A lot of people, their toe next to their big toe is not longer than their big toe. So, you know, let's say we assign gender by that. Because it's all arbitrary.
You'd have to take off your shoes for anybody to know. Whereas with your ears, your lobes.
By Jove, I think he's got it.
Yes, I did. I would never have thought of lobes as an illustration for what you're talking about.
Or, here's another genetic variation. You can maybe with the newborn, we could put a little teeny tiny drop of cilantro oil, and if they go, then it's a girl. Tasty, it's a boy.
I don't like cilantro, though.
Well, people are genetically there are some people, we've been over this, who are genetically predisposed such that cilantro tastes like freaking soap to them.
Really? Maybe that's why I don't like it.
Could be.
Cilantro, and what is that other? Tarragon. I'm not much on tarragon.
I love tarragon, and I love dill.
Well, dill I can deal with. I'm a dill dealer from way back. But how the hell do we get on food? See, this is the insidious thing about this program. Sooner or later, it comes back to food.
Well, because you started out and you asked me what cis meant. Are we clear on cis and trans now?
I am now. Because I've heard you use it. I've heard other people use it. And I didn't even pretend to understand. I just said, okay, that must mean women or men with part. This is kind of a crude way to put it. Factory equipment. Or maybe
no, actually, it has. It's with regard to gender identity.
Okay. All right. But now I understand even more.
Yeah. People who aren't trans live on the same side of the Alps as Rome. I was. That's just what that's what it means.
All right. Okay. Well, you were talking about something earlier that kind of piqued my interest. You mentioned a name that's not mentioned a lot in today's world, and that's Viola Liuzzo. And I will never forget. I think I was like in fifth grade, leafing through a Life magazine, and there was the story about her death. I might say her senseless death. And that was...
Assassination's a good word.
Well, that too. But a lot of people who don't know the name don't know the story. And as I recall the story, she was a housewife from Detroit, or up that way, somewhere up in Michigan, who went down south to show support for the civil rights efforts back around 65, I think is the year she was killed. And she wasn't even from there. And I know that, the old story that's told year after year is, in those days, people who were natives down there didn't like interlopers from elsewhere coming down there and riling people up, causing trouble, troublemakers.
That would be your outside agitators.
Agitators, yes, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. And she was apparently driving home, I think, afterwards, and a car full of nutballs.
Klansmen.
Nutballs, Klansmen. They're all from the same, cut from the same cloth. Idiots, fools, asshats, haters, decided that she didn't need to live anymore. And I think that the story further goes that they had seen her before driving a black protester home or something and decided, well, this woman is obviously an N-word lover and we must make her not be alive anymore, which they did. And that was, not quite, how long ago was that? 65. And it's, and you would think that the mindset, the attitudes, the hatefulness would have been bred out of some of these people, but they're not showing any inclination. They're just changing their targets or expanding their target list is more accurate. They still hate dark people to an extent, but now they've got somebody, a new enemies. They do their enemies list in pencil. I try to be as hopeful as I can and optimistic and think that we're changing in some meaningful, important ways. But there's just increasing evidence that we're not. And it's troubling.
Pick up on my mention of her. The reason she was there, she was born in April of 1925. She was born literally 12 days after my mother. And she was born in California, Pennsylvania, the same place from whence did Jimmy Stewart come from Indiana, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, he was from Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, she was from California, Pennsylvania. And the reason she went down to Alabama, she was living in Michigan at the time, as you noted.
Yeah.
And after the beatings of Bloody Sunday, Dr. King put out the call saying, everyone needs to come down here who cares. And she contacted her husband and said, I'm going. This is everybody's fight. It's the right thing to do. And what made it worse was the fact that she was a in 1965, she was 39 years old, and she was a pretty white one. And that made the Klan even angrier.
Yeah, yeah.
Because miscegenation.
Yeah, those black.
You know, it was people. It was what white folks perceived about a white woman who would have intercourse with a black guy. That gave them the absolute horrors, Scott.
Oh, of course. Of course.
And it was because, you know, they're going to take all our... the Civil War recruiting posters, you know, Yankees are coming down here to take our women. And all she was down there as was literally a witness and a volunteer. Yeah. She contacted the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They said, yes, come on down. And then, on the night of her murder, she was followed and chased by a carload of Klansmen. We know their names: Collie Wilkins, William Eaton, Eugene Thomas, Gary Thomas Rowe. And Gary Thomas Rowe was actually a paid undercover informant working for the FBI.
Yeah, I knew that name rang a bell. I just couldn't remember what it was, but you're right.
And he sat there and did nothing while they slaughtered her. The state of Alabama, didn't have much interest in convicting them. And, you know, they set up a show trial, you know, and they were unable to get a conviction. But Wilkins, Eaton, and Thomas, but not the rat, not the informant, were charged under the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act. And they were found guilty by an all-white, all-male jury, and they got 10 years in prison, which at the time was absolutely unheard of.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the problem. The Federal Bureau of Investigation had an informant in the car, and in order to try to deflect from that, and this is her, again, we're back to Herbert Hoover. This is Herbert Hoover's FBI.
No, it's J. Edgar.
I mean, J. Edgar. I'm sorry. Thank you.
You're thinking of Hubert Heber.
Yeah, I know. I knew I was misspeaking even as I did. But no, this was J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. And we know that at the very same time, J. Edgar Hoover had agents working hammer and tongs to try to discredit Dr. King.
Yeah.
And so the FBI put out, well, they slimed Viola Liuzzo, and they told the press, they leaked it, of course, that she had abandoned her little white children in Michigan to go and fuck black guys in the civil rights movement in the South.
Now, I didn't know that.
The FBI leaked that she was a commie, a member of the Communist Party. The FBI leaked that she was a heroin addict.
Jesus. That part of it I didn't know.
And eventually the Liuzzo family would sue the FBI, but of course the suit was dismissed.
Yeah. Jesus.
But do you see what I'm saying when I say that all of these things are part of a cohesive whole?
Well, in terms of a mindset and attitudes and bad actions on the part of people who are just resistant to anything that they don't like or have been instructed not to like or it's been bred into them not to like. I think it's a deeper thing than just attitudes. It's like in their blood. They're always talking about if you have even one drop of Negro blood, then that calls you into question. You know, they had a rule about that, the one drop rule or something. And some people, that's still part of their attitudes. you know, which goes back to what I was saying before. That's why I don't think we're ever going to make any progress, ever, as long as you've got people like that wielding any kind of influence. And they are. That's the problem. Instead of the dynamic lessening, it's increasing, and it should be laying at the doorstep of Trump and his four horrid years in office that sort of brought it out of the closets and into the streets. Therefore, while people wouldn't express these things out loud in polite company, but now the genie is out of the bottle or whatever. Pandora's out of the box. Well, anyway, thanks for mentioning Leozo, because some names get forgotten, but that's one that I have not forgotten, and I think more people should remember her example when it comes to everybody who's downtrodden and put upon and hated. You know, if you're not part of some solution, you're part of some problem.
Ever since I learned about her, and I learned about her in, I guess, high school, and she always stuck with my mind because she shared a first name with my great grandmother, Viola.
Ah.
And that, of course, gets into the part of the zeitgeist, if you will, because Viola is a Shakespearean character. It's really wild when you see the way that ideas, names, concepts enter the cultural consciousness, and by the time, you know, I've seen lists of like phrases from Shakespeare that people utter every day, and they don't know they're uttering Shakespeare. They don't know that it comes from Shakespeare. They don't know the context that exists in Shakespeare, but yet there they are. I mentioned earlier that I've really enjoyed Winning Time on HBO, and Paul Westhead, the head coach of the Lakers that year that they won that first title in 1980. Well, he had been recruited to be the assistant coach for Jack McKinney. And he was literally recruited out of college, where he was a professor teaching Shakespeare. And so there's this beautiful moment in the final episode. I don't want to give anything away. I mean, it's history. We know how it ended and everything. But they managed to make it truly suspenseful. But, you know, there's the, there. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me call right back because connection went cattywampus. Say something, 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, let me hang up and call right back.
All right, that's fine. Like I hate it when things go cattywampus. But anyway, they're in the locker room at halftime, and there's the head coach of the Lakers giving the St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V. Go figure. Are things better, Scott?
Yeah, everything's fine. The other, you mentioned the program about the Lakers. I am going to watch that. But have you still been watching Gaslit? I meant to mention that.
You know, I forgot, but I've got it. I wasn't sure when they were adding episodes, so.
Yeah, well, watch last night's episode if you.
So is Gaslit dropping on Sundays too?
Yeah, yeah. But last night's episode was a pip, I'm telling you.
How many are there now? How many episodes?
I think there are five, four or five.
Ooh, really?
I think. No, I take that back. Maybe that was the third.
Okay, so I've got it. Okay.
Okay, but definitely watch that. But the other thing that I know that you didn't watch. And I'm sure it's on YouTube by now. You were talking about the Supreme Court and the abortion issue. I don't think I have seen a better brief history and explanation of this topic on general interest television than the one I saw last night that John Oliver did on Last Week with John Oliver. See if you can find that and watch it, because he just lays it out. And the nice thing about it is he goes from soup to nuts with the history and why the Republicans have been seemingly so successful in turning this into a madhouse sort of country where women are going to be wearing red hoods before it's all over if they have their way. And we were talking about this the other day, about they play the long game, and they play for keeps, and they play to win. And anybody who didn't see Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO last night, search out that episode and watch it, because he did a magnificent job. They should give him a raise and a more comfortable chair and a balloon bouquet for the job that he did. And I know that's not on your usual viewing
list. Oh, no. I usually do catch John Oliver. He's orders of magnitude better than, say, oh, I don't know, Joke Toad.
And he showed a clip from, I think, even before or immediately after Roe v. Wade was decided and handed down. And the guy sat there in glorious black and white. A piece of 1967 footage from one of the networks, this anti-abortion person, anti-choice person, and basically laid out what their agenda was and mentioned, I believe, not in passing, that it was there was going to be a long game, and even if it took 50 years, they would overturn it. And what did it take? Just short of 50 years. I mean, as things stand now, I'm hoping that maybe we can pull a minor miracle out of it, but it seems that that is not in the cards. I mean, and some people were saying back when they originally heard the case, I think in December or February, maybe it was February, whenever they heard it, that there was talk through the grapevine then that this would not portend positively for the pro-choice advocates. And here we are. And as for, I told you my theory about the leak of Alito's draft.
Share it again.
It was not a clerk, a disgruntled clerk or whatever, or an activist or whatever. It was the spirit of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the five Republicans who voted in the original Roe v. Wade case. You know, they didn't want their thing undone, so they came from the great beyond. And maybe there's no validity to that, but I would like to think that they're spinning in their graves.
Well, I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't have anything to do with the original Roe.
Well, no, but she, you know, she, and I know she said that she didn't think it was decided on a completely sound basis.
No, she was very clear that it needed to be decided upon the issue of an individual right to privacy, because she was brilliant enough, because she was brilliant, to see that that was ultimately their goal. And look, I mean, I had a story over the weekend about the Mike Pencil Neck Geek getting some of the best applause that he has gotten in recent years, talking about how the headline was Pence decries planned abortion activist disruptions of Mother's Day church services. Totally unacceptable. And the story, full disclosure, the story comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which means there was no there were no massive disruptions of Mother's Day church services.
Yeah, I think we would have heard about that had there been such.
You know, there was a march, you know, I ran the audio at the beginning of the program. There was a march past St. Patrick's Cathedral, but that's where St. Patrick's Cathedral is. And there were a bunch of men, of course, sitting there groping their goddamn rosaries. But the thing is, Mike Pencilneck Geek, decried it. But along the way, he said, talking about the leak, whoever this individual was, if their intention was to change the outcome of this case, they will fail. Because I do believe that the conservative majority on the court, including three of whom were appointed in the Trump-Pence administration, will do their job. But I also believe, and this is the takeaway here.
Yeah.
I also believe that whatever the outcome of this case, we will never rest, we will never relent, until the Supreme Court of the United States overturns Roe v. Wade and gives our country a new beginning for life, except for the women who will die in unsafe...
Now, you added that last
part. Yeah, I did.
We're catching on. We know what to do.
But the thing is, that I mean, when somebody tells you who he is, believe him the first time.
Yeah.
They are never going to stop until they have total fee simple ownership of every uterus capable of bearing a child in the entire United States of America. Period. Full stop. And they're going to monitor the periods, too.
Well, and it's, I think it was Lawrence O'Donnell, but I think John Oliver also mentioned that. All of the, and I know that none of us here did this, but all of the people who voted for presidents, who nominated these people to sit on the court, need to rethink their votes. And especially these Republican women who are also going to be caught up in the dragnet if this thing goes to its not logical, but predictable conclusion, the outcome of this thing when they do the final draft and hand it down as a ruling or a decision, you know, they're going to be caught up in the madness too. And I'm not talking about rich Republican women. I'm talking about the people who have been led to believe that the Republicans are on their side and they are their favorite people, okay? And hopefully they will wake up and smell the coffee, as Ann Landers or Dear Abby used to say quite a lot to prove a point or make a point, that you people have been duped for so long that you don't even know what the hell's going on until it happens to you. And we're right at the apex, the precipice or whatever, of it happening to them. Because it's not just liberal people who want and need and should have access to safe, legal health care when it comes to their reproductive system. It's anybody who is of childbearing age who could get caught up in this madness. And part of the problem is our foresight is not very good in the sense that people will buy into the program of these people who say that they're on their side, these politicians of the GOP stripe, and they'll support them and they'll get them elected in the Senate where they confirm these justices and in the presidency where they nominate these people. And the results are predictable. It was just a matter of when the perfect case would be chosen to be heard, and the court would already be stacked and packed. And here we are. And it's good to know going in and going forward that, you know, look in the mirror, you Republicans who thought you were doing a right and noble thing by electing the various Bushes and the Trump and the,
because they're going to protect the unborn.
Well,
there's a couple of things I'd like to bring up here.
I wish you would.
One, we have to understand that all of this proceeds from a religious mania against sex. Just sex.
And women?
Well, women are often involved in sex.
Yeah. Lately, but...
And what I mean by this is... I don't know the degree of cognitive dissonance. It must be substantial. But again, you have to view this, and the legal Latin term is in pari materia. You know, you have to view this, you can't just take it out and view it, you know, as a single thing, you know, academically. You have to look at the universe in which it exists.
Yeah.
It's like Lady B writing in about, you know, first the white women were afraid of the black women, now they're afraid of the trans women, because, you know, Republican white women are always afraid of everything. I guess because they're married to Republican men. But that being the case, you have to view this assault on a woman's right to access reproductive choice in view of how Republicans think about sex. They can't enjoy it unless it's dirty, okay? They preach this game of sex is only for purposes of procreation, and if you're not trying to make a baby, you shouldn't ought to be a fucking. And then it turns out that, you know, you get stories like the one that Patterson Hood wrote about the preacher's wife in Selmer, Tennessee. He was an up and coming young Church of Christ pastor, but at trial it was adduced that the only way he could get off was if his good Church of Christ preacher's wife put on a wig and a pair of hooker heels.
Oh, dear.
And she grew weary of it and eventually took a 12-gauge shotgun and shot him in the back at point-blank range. There will be a lot more of those cases in the aftermath of this decision. But the thing is, Republicans have such an unhealthy view towards sex, and this is what leads to, like, Baptist ministers being caught with a man in their mouth, that kind of thing. Are we all so old that we can't remember just say no? In terms of drugs, that was Nancy. But then, 10 years, 12 years later, you've got abstinence-only sex education, which was not sex education at all. It was just telling teenagers not to fuck.
Yeah.
You'd probably have a better chance telling teenagers not to breathe or not to eat food.
Or listen to loud music or whatever. Yeah. But I think.
I guess they think that they're not. Now, Susie, I told you, don't fuck. You were 3 months old when I looked in your diaper and told you I was the only guy that was ever going to see your vagina till you were 25, and you are not 25 yet, Susie.
You're creeping us out again. Robert.
Well, ripped from the headlines. That's the son of Rudy Giuliani.
I know. But in addition to it being about sex, doesn't it also come down to power and empowerment?
Well, sure, and patriarchy and all that. But then, okay, here's a totally separate one for your contemplation. When John Brown was executed, he was executed for treason against the state of Virginia. Not against the United States. John Brown was not a citizen of the state of Virginia or the Commonwealth of Virginia. How could he possibly have committed treason against it? He might have levied war against
Kansas?
It.
He
yeah, and he was born in New York.
Yeah.
Well, that got me to wondering. What if they put out this horrible opinion, and what if some, say, prosecutor, I know this is just a thought experiment, but what if the Attorney General of California convened a grand jury for purposes of indicting Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and the handmaid for treason against the state of California, for violating the civil rights of Californians by saying that if a Californian happens to find herself pregnant in another state and can't get one. I mean, it doesn't have to be treason. It could be some other crime. But what if there was a movement nationwide to indict those five motherfuckers in California, Oregon, Washington, Minnesota, New York, New Jersey, Vermont, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Illinois?
Well, and there have been precedents in terms of state attorneys general joining forces, making a unified effort toward some goal.
Well, but that's like a joint lawsuit. I'm talking about something that, you know, so that, you know, say so that the handmaid could never, ever, ever, ever go and deliver some fetus fetish lecture to, oh, I don't know, what is it, Cal State Irvine? Isn't that the right wing? There's some god awful right wing law school in California that they all just flock to.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. I'm not sure that it's there. It may be, but I don't know. But yeah, I get your point, because anything to keep madness from continuing to run rampant in our judiciary. I don't know. How is it that they decry what they call activist judges when this is, you can't get a better description than activist judges and what these bozos are doing?
They'll probably retire that phrase now.
How does it apply when they're deciding a case brought from a sovereign state of Mississippi? How does it magically transform into a national ban? All 50 states, even the ones who have laws to the contrary, how does it make that shift? And maybe Mississippi said that they ought to do that, but just because Mississippi wanted it everywhere, the case was brought from Mississippi. The ruling should apply to Mississippi because that was
No, it doesn't quite work like that. The ruling was brought to from Mississippi. Okay, Mississippi passed this statute to directly be in violation of the holding in Roe.
Okay.
The purpose of this Mississippi statute was to create something that was directly in conflict with the holding in Roe, thereby setting up a conflict of laws and making it possible for Roe to be overturned.
Yeah, like you said the other day, they search out these cases or set them up on the local level.
Yeah.
Toward that end. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that wouldn't work. But it's been a week. It seems like it's been longer. You know, because every time you turn on the TV, you get either Ukraine or you get this most recent outrage about people's rights. And not just rights that somebody made up day before yesterday. We're talking about something that has been reaffirmed over the past almost 50 years in several different ways. And to make it even worse, you've had nominees to the court in recent years who have sworn up and down under oath, under penalty of perjury, that, oh, well, we recognize this as something that's of long standing and has been established and later affirmed and reaffirmed. We're not going anywhere near that. They didn't say it quite that way. They didn't say they would, but they also didn't say they wouldn't. Okay? Which takes us back to the presidents who nominate these fuckers and the senators who confirm them. It's a multifaceted approach that we should have been taking all along and not been caught napping on the job, which I freely admit, I figured this was a done deal and A-OK, and we can move forward and focus our attentions on other pressing problems. But that this was pretty much a settled thing. Well, what a fool I was. And not just me, I'm sure there's a lot of people who got a little complacent, and maybe they should have been complacent, but now we're finding out maybe we shouldn't have been. I mean, yeah, granted, Trump, when he was running in the run-up in 2015 and then in the election year 2016, one of his favorite promises was, I'm going to nominate people to the court who think your way, you rubes out there, when it comes to preserving the right to life. And he sure as hell did. And there didn't seem to be anything to be done to keep it from happening, which is why we're in this mess that we're in today. I'm not breaking any new ground here. I'm looking at what went on before that led us to where we are now. And
Brother Deacon Asa just he sent along a story a little bit ago from Bloomberg News. McConnell vows GOP won't scrap filibuster to pass abortion ban. But he does say that when the Republicans are in power next time, he said, I will never support smashing the legislative filibuster on this issue or any other. But then he said, when they get power again, they'll ban abortion nationally.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let me make that more clear. I'll never support smashing the legislative filibuster on this issue or any other. Of course, he's already smashed the legislative filibuster to get the handmaid on and Brat and Ann's boy Neil. So there's that. And what he was saying, well, you know, with the Republicans, you know, no, I'll never, which is McConnell code for it. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then it'll be exactly what I've previously said, that the instant he has power again, he will look at Joe Manchin and say, sit down and shut up, Joe. I'm about to make a monkey out of you and that curtsy lady from Arizona. Bye-bye, filibuster. And it'll be gone for anything that the Republicans want to do.
Where are we in terms of, it may even be too early because we still haven't been done with all the primaries for these Senate races, but a third of the Senate is up for renewal or dismissal come November.
All right.
That's not too far away.
Well, I mean, you got the maggots booing Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, Bamistan.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
But they will coalesce around him come election time. But we've got possibilities in a number of states. Remember, we got to pick up at least three seats to make Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema irrelevant. We need to pick up four if you want to make Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and Chris Coons irrelevant.
Well, there are a couple of Democrats,
because he gets kind of squishy too.
There are a couple of Democrats in Pennsylvania. Where did I see that? I guess it was on the show.
Well, John Fetterman's got a great chance in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. What about Ryan in Ohio?
Well, Tim Ryan is certainly about a million times more sane than J.P. Mandel or J.D. Mandel or J.P. Vance or whoever that dude is, the hillbilly eulogy guy.
Robin, I don't mean to scare you, But when I walk the streets of San Diego after I've gotten off the bus, I've passed people on the street talking, and they're not using a phone, so I don't know who the hell they're talking to. They would be better than J.D. Vance.
Well, please. A half rotten rutabaga would be better than J.D. Vance.
I used to drive a rutabaga back when I was a boy.
But so there's a viable chance in Ohio. There's a viable chance in Pennsylvania. There's a viable chance in Wisconsin. Florida's a maybe, and Charles Booker may turn around and give Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head a run for his money.
Oh, yeah, Marco is up.
Yeah.
I don't mean Marcos in the Philippines. See, that's another thing that scares me.
Yeah, Marco the blonde in Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Little Marco. Can't think of the lady's name, but she used to be a police official, I believe.
Val Demings.
Val Demings, yes. And she presents herself quite well. I mean, she's not talking any jive. I mean, she is just getting right down to it.
Oh, well, but no. You have to take in the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol, because they holler, Val Demings is a cop!
Well, listen, I'm old enough to remember when Mr. Mack, the policeman who used to direct traffic down at King and Washington so that we could all cross the street safely. So not all cops are bad. I mean, some of them are just real pricks, okay? And I understand that to some people, police, no matter who they are, there's a mindset there and maybe an experiential history there that cops are not necessarily your friend. But in her case, I mean, she's better than the alternative.
Yeah, by orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
So just a moment ago, Lee in New York sent me, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department this evening, the list of everybody who's up in 22. And the Democrats don't have a hell of a lot to worry about. We got to hang on to Mark Kelly in Arizona, and we got to hang on to Reverend Warnock in Georgia.
Yeah.
The rest of the states should be pretty solid. Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto is facing off against Adam Laxalt. That could be
kin to Paul Laxalt.
I guess, yeah.
God, Reagan's old buddy.
That could be tough. Maggie Hassan will probably handle whoever shows up against her in New Hampshire. Chuck Schumer's safe in New York. Ron Wyden likely safe in Oregon. It'll be Patrick Leahy in Vermont is retiring, and Peter Welch is running for his seat as the Democrat. Candidate remains unknown for the Republican. Patty Murray is probably safe in Washington. Alabama has an open Senate seat, but, you know, Alabama doesn't have a Democratic Party, so, oh well. What will be curious, in Alaska, Lisa Murkowski is the incumbent Republican, and she might bring on a great deal of ire by virtue of the fact that she won't support this codification of Roe versus Wade. Arkansas, John Boozman is the incumbent, and he's gonna sail in because there's no Democratic Party in Arkansas.
Well, wait a minute. Wasn't Lisa Murkowski one of the ones who
voted to impeach Trump?
Well, yeah, but
or voted to convict, rather.
Didn't she say something it wasn't that she was stunned, but she was, when Alito's draft was leaked, wasn't she one of the Republican senators
who said that she had been lied to? Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought.
Not that
why won't she codify it in law?
Well, because it takes 60 votes.
Well, and see, that's another problem. No matter how if the Democrats remain in charge of the Senate after November, come the new term next year, we're still far away from 60, but way far away from 60 votes. This is as far as we are now.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, so let me make something clear about Florida. Val Demings is not the nominee yet because Alan Grayson is running against her in the primary. But she will probably be the Democratic nominee. There's no challenge in Idaho for Mike Crapo. Todd Young is safe in Taliban Indiana. Iowa could be interesting. Because cranky old Chuck Grassley is, you know, a million years old. Abby Finkenauer will probably be the Democratic challenger. She is sharp as a tack, and the Iowegians will probably return Chuck Grassley, who, incidentally, if he wins this re-election, his next re-election, he will be 95. But to his credit, there's not. It's not an open secret in Washington that he has completely lost his shit, like it is with DiFi.
Yeah, maybe they can get them adjoining suites down at the home.
There's a possibility it might get interesting in Kansas. If Charles Booker gets the nomination, it could make a difference. Louisiana's a lost cause. Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone is going to be reelected down there, even though he got publicly humiliated in his own committee hearing recently. I mean, that's a delightful one, too. Let me see if I can find that.
Who are we talking about? Kennedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember the cartoon Deputy Dog?
Yeah.
I think Kennedy ought to sound more like Deputy Dog than he already does.
Well, I think of him as Foghorn Leghorn. And he's a total con artist because he actually knows how to speak the coin's English.
Yeah, I know.
But he puts on the hokum accent for the rubes.
Yeah.
Or maybe in Louisiana that would be the R-E-A-U-B. X's. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the other, last week, he was grilling a law professor from American University named Amanda Frost, who is an actual expert on things like recusal.
Yeah.
And he was trying to get her to explain what the legal responsibilities are for a member of the Supreme Court, and he thought, and you know, he's a brilliant legal scholar. Just ask him; he'll tell you. And so he's querying Professor Frost, and suddenly it didn't go quite as maybe he had told himself it was going to go.
The integrity of the United States Supreme Court, the inadequacy, in your opinion, of its recusal provisions, or having a member of the United States Senate go on the steps of the United States Supreme Court in front of God and country and threaten justices by name if they do not vote the way he wants them to vote on Roe v. Wade.
So, Senator, unfortunately, over the last decade, particularly the last 5 years or so, I have seen the court come under attack from so many different sources.
Yes, ma'am, but what about that particular...
That, I think that's a problem. I would certainly not support a senator criticizing the court. It's also a problem when the Senate of the United States will not confirm a nominee for over a year, leaving the court at 8 justices. And it's...
Ow!
It's also a problem when Congress will not amend existing legislation to improve the process of recusal so that all of the justices can weigh in on a recusal decision and protect the integrity of that court. All of those are a problem.
Oops. She kind of handed him his own ass.
Is there any video? Does he have that monkey working a math problem look?
Yeah, to truth be known, he did. a Horn classic for the ages. Looks like a monkey working a math problem.
I kind of heard it in his voice there because he
yeah, because she didn't say, well, you know, you are the horse's ass who participated in keeping that seat open for a year on bullshit pretenses. Anyway, back to the Senate possibilities. North Carolina is a possible. Because Richard Burr has had enough. That's an open seat. Ohio is a possible. Oklahoma's a lost cause. Both of their seats are, James Lankford is an incumbent, but James Snowball Inhofe is taking a powder. See what I did there? Snow, powder.
Yeah,
come on.
All right.
Pennsylvania's a chance. So, you know, Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Iowa outside chance. That's four. Tim Scott's probably okay in South Carolina. John Thune's okay in South Dakota. Utah, though, has Evan McMullen, an independent, going up against constitutional scholar and insurrectionist Mike Lee.
Now, isn't he the veteran, the bald-headed fellow?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, in Wisconsin, candidate unknown, but going up against the man who constantly vies for stupidest man in the entire Senate, Ron Johnson.
Oh, yes.
So, taken together, just counting the possibles, Iowa, Wisconsin, Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Six. If you got that much handwriting on the wall, you might turn a couple of Republicans once in a while. And, of course, you know, Moscow Mitch is getting up there in age. But senators tend to live to great ages because they're...
Well, yeah, getting back to Grassley, he's approaching Strom Thurmond territory, isn't he, in terms of age?
Grassley, like I said, yeah, if he wins this term, he will be 95 when he has to run again in 30. Or, I'm sorry, 28.
And I just don't know about... I don't want to get ageist or anything, but especially on the other side of the aisle, these guys were cranky old dudes, and the ladies were cranky old dudettes back when they were in their 60s, some of them.
Yeah, you know? Oh, yeah. I mean, the Sister Carol Baker used to tell the story of being at Girl State and having Chuck Grassley reach over and eat off her plate.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, I don't go for that. They gave you your plate, Senator. You have cutlery there. You've got your napkin in your lap like a proper gentle person. Now, God damn it, eat off your own plate. What did she have that he wanted so badly? Well, maybe I'm not going to go there. I'm thinking it through.
Well, I got a comment from Kevin up in Massachusetts who said, all the senators left in the Republican Party that are not big-time Trumpers, how many are there? Mikowski, Collins, Romney, off the top of my head, should blow up the filibuster now. They've got 7 months to get first voting reform and then codify Roe, followed by Build Back Better. The House has passed. Problem is, Romney is pro overturning Roe because he needs a little more little fetuses for his church. He is, after all, a bishop. My point is, Kevin says, if these Republican senators want a way of life they have now, they better get with Democrats minus Manchin and Sinema, because in 2024, if the GOP gets a trifecta, they'll physically come after them eventually for not being loyal Trumpers.
Yeah,
Romney came within mere seconds of being killed on January 6th, and he's apparently already forgotten that. They need to put their power desires aside and create a big block with the Democrats now. I mean, these moderate Republicans must know that even if they give absolute fealty to Trumpism between now and 2024, they still may be the victims of revenge. And he's right. There is a, you know, the problem with fascist revolutions is that sooner or later somebody has to be Ernst Röhm.
Well, the record is clear in terms of, and Esper is the latest example, and I even sent an email to that effect. He has nothing good to say about Esper and his book and his appearance on 60 Minutes. And you can go down the list of all the people that he picked over his administration that he later badmouths to within an inch of their lives. If they were so bad, why did he pick them for jobs to begin with? And it seems
his excuse, Scott, is
they were recommended to me by rhinos that I didn't know were rhinos at the time. But they were rhinos, and I had to run the whole United States military.
To say that he is incompetent to run the United States military, I wouldn't give him a red kettle at Christmas time set up by the Salvation Army to run.
Well, fuck no, he'd steal everything in it.
Well, that too. I wasn't going to go there. I was just, it's just a season for a little Christian charity here, Robin. Now, come on.
Who's that rumbling, bumbling, stumbling boob in the overcoat and the comb over, orange comb over, running away with the kettle? That's just
and
Trump.
The tripod.
That's just
not
Trump.
Just the kettle.
And the tripod.
Yeah, I might get something for the tripod and the kettle at a pawn shop.
Where's my handbill?
Take the kettle, leave the handbill.
I was kind of proud of that one.
I thought you did well on that. Out in the Jersey marshes. Take the cannoli. Take the gun. No, take. What do they want him to take?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, you kind of cheered me up some.
I'm glad I tried. Oh, and by the way, I should probably mention, out of fairness, there's a possibility there won't be a program tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. Oh. Tomorrow's the election. I might be hanging out over at the county clerk's office watching the returns come in.
Well, I would, because, you know, I mean, you've got a right to be there, and as a candidate, I mean, I don't know how it goes. I don't know that there's even been polling, but sometimes making a statement is important, and visibility is important.
Oh, visibility's been a big thing all through this. And I'm considering wearing I've put pictures of it. I've got this really pretty all-white maxi dress that I just love, and, you know, being suffragette colors, I thought it might be a nice touch.
Yeah. What time do the polls close in West Virginia?
7. But I'm sure they'll have like the early votes counted by then, and that may be enough to tell me that it's all over but the shouting.
What kind of turnout in most places these
I'm not expecting much in the way of, I mean, this is a midterm election. Turnout will probably be low, and it could be decided by a relatively small number of votes.
Yeah, and see, that's the tragedy of it.
This is also our first year with these new districts. It could cut both ways. because one of the nice things about my candidacy is that the people who are aware of it are absolutely 100% behind me. There's no wavering. And they're talking. And they're telling their friends.
Yeah.
And that could make a big difference. I mean, they say word of mouth is the best advertising, and I've done the best I could do to generate all the word of mouth I can.
Well, and you have, and I mean, I think it was Tip O'Neill that said, well, famously, all politics is local, but somewhat less famously was something that he said was, you know, in these election cycles, you've got to press the flesh, and you've got to meet people face to face and look them in the eye, thank them for their past support, if that's the case, and ask them for their vote again, or for the first time, if it's someone who's never voted before. It's retail politics 101. And, hey, look, this is the season of long shots, Robin. If an 80-1 horse can win...
I got to admit, I was a little inspired.
The fucking Kentucky Derby... We may be living in an age...
What's the math on that? $100 bet brought in $8,000?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd had money on it. My God. 80-1? And it was a big field of horses, too. It wasn't just the usual 12 or 16 or whatever. I don't know how many... I didn't see the race, but I saw footage of it, you know, after that...
Yeah.
80-1? Are you kidding me? That's just incredible.
I said, gave a girl a little hope.
Well, there you go. What are they feeding that horse?
Hopefully it was estrogen.
Pardon me.
That's okay. I thought that was a good one, too. You set him up, I'll knock him down. And I don't know if you noticed this, but Darlene in Connecticut sent this along. Did you see the story about the anti-choice group who got their offices in Madison, Wisconsin, Molotov cocktailed over the weekend?
I believe I did.
Yeah, the chief of police of Madison is. Well, we're still looking for video footage of what happened Sunday morning. The two Molotov cocktails went into the offices of the Wisconsin Family Action. And the funny thing is, the firebombs didn't ignite, but a separate fire was lit in their place. And then on the wall, they painted, "If abortions aren't safe, then you aren't either."
Yeah. Well, you know, Madison, Wisconsin has a history of radical,
yes,
activities on many sides.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Bill O'Brien was there when one of the buildings went up. He was working on his PhD. But the real hilarity of this story is the police chief or whatever saying, "Hate or violence do not advance any cause, and unfortunately we're investigating the fruits of hate and violence in the form of an arson where a specific nonprofit group was targeted for their beliefs regarding the issue of abortion." I don't know how he didn't manage to mention all the clinics that have been bombed and the doctors who have been assassinated. "This attack is abhorrent."
Well, it's the same one-sided viewpoint and outlook that they have, you know, when they talk about so-called judicial activism. When they're doing it, it's just tickety-boo.
Well, when they're doing it, they're doing it for Jesus.
Well, what district does he vote in?
The Wisconsin Family Action, though, way down in the story, they point out that, you know, they're not just an anti-abortion group. They're also they also hate gay people because they're Republicans and Christians. So they're opposed to same-sex marriage. They oppose abortion. And wait a minute. Trifecta. They are against vaccines. They're anti-vaxxers.
Well, they want everybody to die.
They're a suicide cult.
Except the little baby fetuses. Jesus. Well, now you're starting to discourage me again. I don't know.
And meanwhile, President Biden, through a spokesperson, said he strongly believes in the constitutional right to protest, but that should never include violence, threats, or vandalism. That from Jen Psaki. And it would have been nice if she had added that includes all the bombings of abortion clinics and all the assassinations and slaughters and murders of doctors who take care of women's reproductive needs.
And how is the search for the January 6th bomb placer at the GOP and the Democratic National Headquarters?
Oh, that's been what? Huh? Where? Who?
What file drawer has that been stuck into the back of?
Here's a hint. It's circular.
Oh, I see. Well, thanks for clearing that up, Robin.
Just on the way out the door, real quick. Have you been following the story out of Alabama on the desperate search for the prison guard and apparently her 6'9" homicidal boyfriend?
Heavily tattooed boyfriend, if you please. Yeah, I have been. That's got TV movie written all over it.
Well, I think unless I got this all wrong, they may have been caught.
Oh, really? How far did they make it?
If I read correctly, Talibandiana. There it is. Hold on.
All right.
Yeah, escaped inmate, jail employee, apprehended in Talibandiana. Vicky White and murder suspect Casey White, and when it's an Alabama story, you have to say, not related, were apprehended in Evansville, Indiana. They were spotted at a hotel. Then they led police on a car chase. They wrecked the car. Vicky White, driving the Cadillac, was hospitalized with very serious injuries from a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Holy fuck.
And the county sheriff, Dave Wedding of Vandenberg County, said, can't clarify how long they've been in Evansville. Lucky we stumbled on them today.
Jeez. Evansville, that's down state a ways. That's down by... my map of Michigan is fuzzy today. I can't, or maybe that's upstate. I don't know. I used to know. Sorry. I'm sure somebody knows. What condition was the inmate in?
No mention of any distress on his part. And the sheriff, Rick Singleton of Lauderdale County, Alabama. Remember, this is the county where I was born. And they're gonna if they can keep her alive, they'll bring her back to indict her in Lauderdale County and him in Lauderdale County. And Rick Singleton said, he's not getting out of this jail again, I assure you that. Oh, dude, I wouldn't say something like that. Because he was highly motivated to get the hell out of there because he was already facing capital murder charges.
Yeah.
6'9" tall.
Yeah. Yeah, that's James Comey territory. No, he's about 6'6".
And the thing is, his tattoos, yeah, white supremacist.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guard that he ran off with, I mean, she's a poster child. I don't know what her political and racial beliefs are, but she's blindingly white. It was the description.
Yeah, he's 30. He's 38. She's 56.
Yeah. And the signs were all there. She put her house up for sale. She drew like $90,000 or something out of the bank. She put her retirement paperwork in. You know, when you're 56 and you're going to retire, that's not a sign of settling down and getting things, you know, in a nice, neat pile for the rest of your life. That's...
No, not so much.
No, hell no. She's gonna be put up in the gray bar as well on the other side.
Yeah, I don't think there's gonna be any conjugal visitation.
No, probably not.
Oh, and going back to the firebombing, Jude says the thought that hit me was that we don't take that type of destructive action on our side, and what a way to set us up. Yeah, but see, there's one thing that suggests it may actually have been somebody from our side, Jude. The spray painting on the wall was properly spelled.
Yeah.
And grammatically correct.
Yeah.
I think there was even a comma in there. If it was a setup, they would have made an obvious mistake. And it's done in a pretty cursive script, too.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, there's an apostrophe between the N and the T of aren't.
Yeah. I thought handwriting was a dead art, but apparently not.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, Jude may be right, because if abortions aren't safe, they randomly capitalize the word safe as if it was written by Trump.
Well, I would check his store receipts to see if he bought spray paint recently. But then again, he can't spell. Now, he does miscapitalize a lot of words.
Well, that's his German heritage sneaking through.
Well, that and the fact that his spirochetes all got a subscription to Hooked on Phonics, so anything is possible in that man's head.
All true. Scott, it's been a blast. You have yourself a good evening. And
I will.
If I'm here, I'm here. And if I'm not, I'm not tomorrow evening. So.
Well, if you go proudly and travel safely. And we'll catch up next time we catch up. And Horn family, I must put in a plug for the Horn effort here. I don't know what the deal is, and I understand that for many of us, times are difficult, but the program is listener-supported. It's commercial-free, which means it's listener-supported. And you don't have to kick in a lot. If a lot of people would kick in a little on a consistent basis, the coffers would be filled and the bills would be paid. And the show will go on. And I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to suggest strongly it's an important resource. And the importance of it and our interest in it and reliance upon it is reflected in many ways through calls, through emails. But most importantly and vitally and realistically, kick in if you can. That's all I'm saying. Not going to preach. I'm just going to say, If the spirit moves you in that direction, don't fight the spirit. Don't kick against the pricks, as St. Paul used to say. So didn't he say that?
Yeah, I think yes.
That's the if you feel a strong urge to kick in, do that, because otherwise you may be miserable for days on end and not know why.
Indeed. All right. Scott,
take
be good.
Care, Robin.
Have a good night. Enjoy. I hope you're enjoying the new haircut.
Oh, I listen to squirrels. You know how squirrels do a double take sometimes? I one of them did a triple, dropped his nuts right out of his little squirrely hands and did a triple take. So there you go.
All right. See
guys.
You, Scott.
Take care.
Bye.
Good night.
And so, you know, Scott was not kidding. It is rough. We got down to 1490 this evening. Tomorrow will be 1790, and that makes things difficult. But we're out of here. Thank you to each and every one of you who are our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributor this evening and every evening. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Steve from Georgistan, Brother Bishop Steve, all-around great guy and pinch hit chat room midweek utility moderator. Thank you so much for popping by, keeping an eye on things. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now proudly a union shop. Stay safe. Get your boosters. Boosters. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Don't be afraid to wear your mask. Don't let anybody shame you out of taking care of yourself. Keep your social distance. Numbers are on the rise. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying,
I had to run the entire United States military.
Avoid that orangutan like the plague. Orangutans can carry plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.